ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम नाइन्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 4 टेक्स्ट नंबर 30। प्रतान्ते कार्तिके मासि त्रिरात्रं समुपोषिता स्नात कदाचित् कालिन्द्रम् हरिं मधुबने चयत् व्रत अन्ते। At the end of observing the vow, Kartike, in the month of Kartik, October, November, Masi, in that month, Triratram, for 3 nights, Samuposhita, after completely observing the fast, Snata, after bathing, Kadachit, once upon a time, Kalindyam, on the bank of the Yamuna, Harim, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Madhuvane, in that part of the Vrindavan area known as Madhuvana, Orchayat, worshipped the Lord. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In the month of Kartika, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Yamuna, Maharaj Ambarisha worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in Madhuban. Please repeat. In the month of Kartika, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Yamuna, Maharaj Ambarish worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, Hari, in Madhuban. Om Jnana Timurandasya Ganam Jana Sharakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Dharati Shva Parantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyate Leshatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siya Dvaita Garadha Shivashadi Gaud Bhakta Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this verse has no purport, but it's trailing from the previous verse, which His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj elaborated on very nicely. But since there's no purport, I'm just going to refer back to the purport. I'll read the previous verse again, just so this is a continuation, actually, today's verse. To worship Lord Krishna, Maharaj Ambarish, along with his queen, who was equally qualified, observed the vow of Ekadashi and Dwadashi for 1 year. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that anyone who's interested, I wanted to elaborate a little more about the first part of that purport about the vow of Ekadashi and vows in general. And, of course, the second part of it was about the queen being equally qualified and how, and Maharaj spoke very nicely about marriage and the importance of marriage. So actually these two concepts are in the verse, marriage and vow, that although the vow, specific vow that's being spoken of here is Ekadashi, still, when we speak of, as in the previous verse, the words are Tulya Shilaya, that a queen, the queen, the wife, is very dedicated. So marriage is based on vows, as is everything in Krishna consciousness. 35 years and 3 days ago, here in Dallas, Srila Prabhupada spoke on one verse, in the third canto, 12th chapter, 12th verse, which says, tapashaiva param jyotir bhagavantam madoksajam sarvabhuta guhava sam. That there are three aspects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param jyoti, the jyoti, Brahma jyoti, and sarvabhuta guhavasam, the paramatma within the heart of every living entity, and bhagavantam madoksaja, Bhagavanta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in his personal form, who is adoksaja. Therefore, people incline themselves to the impersonal because it's easier to perceive. It's easier to perceive an energy. And Srila Prabhupada gives the purport, gives in his class the understanding or the example that he gave so many times, that we can easily perceive the sunshine, but it's not so easy to perceive the sun globe. And even more difficult, how many people, with all the cosmic photos that we've taken, how many do we have of Vivasvan? How many do we have of the inhabitants? Just like we have photos of inhabitants in China, Russia, different continents. But we don't, of course, they don't even have any of the moon. Srila Prabhupada said many times, if they even went, then what did they bring back? Dust and rocks. No. So better, if we're looking for dust, better to go to Vrindavan. No. That's the best dust. No. Why go to the moon when you can go to Vrindavan and get first-class dust? So, and right now they're doing construction, so there's a lot of it available in the air. No. You can get it readily available in all parts of the body. No. Thoroughly bathed in the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. So these vows are very important. Very important to... otherwise, if there's marriage without a vow, or if there's anything... So therefore, the Bhagavatam says, if you want to perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any form, even as Brahma Jyoti, what to speak of Bhagavantam as the Krishna or Narayan, then adoksajam. No. It's beyond the perception. It's not something you don't go and just see Krishna. Even though Krishna is right here in the form of Shishi Radha Kalachanji. So beautiful. But other people may come and they may see some beauty, but they will only see material beauty if they don't have the qualification. So Srila Prabhupada mentioned that the first qualification is tapasa eva, that one has to perform penance. And the verse basically says that without penance, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any form. And Srila Prabhupada emphasized that. Also in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it's describing tapa, the meditation of Lord Brahma, when he heard through meditation the words tapa, and he began to perform penance, Srila Prabhupada says, without penance, there's no question of spiritual life. There's no possibility of spiritual life. And actually, he says that the only thing there is in spiritual life, the only thing that human life is meant for, is tapasya. No, it is not meant for sense gratification. No. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, first canto of the Bhagavatam, it states that human life is meant for apavargyasya, no, for a spiritual advancement, transcendence. It's not meant for sense gratification. And whatever, the sense gratification must be there. Actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborated on this, that there has to be some sense gratification. Because without sense gratification, you can't live. Our senses, they demand. You have to eat something, you have to drink something. No, there has to be social interaction. But that sense gratification should be just to the degree that it facilitates our understanding of Krishna. Tatvajigyasa. That only to the point of understanding the real purpose of human life. So that is the purpose of sense gratification. So, yes, sense gratification has to be there. But real sense gratification, as Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, real sense gratification means Krishna. No. Krishna, is, in the form of Hrishikesh, is in charge of the senses. He is the owner of the senses. And therefore, the only way you can get sense gratification is through Krishna. Otherwise, there's no sense gratification available in any other means. So therefore, tapasya. No. This is the purpose of human life. And there are many examples. No. We just examine our lives. It's just a series of tapasyas. You know, just like in the beginning of one's day, we have to get up. You know. For most people, of course, for the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, that wasn't a tapasya. Actually, for them, nothing was a tapasya. For them, tapasya was to eat and to sleep. That's their tapasya. Oh, I have to sleep now. I have to forget about Krishna for an hour or 2 hours. No, that was their tapasya. And our tapasya is getting up. No. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says that for a great sage, no, the daytime for a materialistic person is nighttime for the sage, and the nighttime for great sages is daytime for ordinary people. So we start out our day difficult. No, we have to get up. And then if we aren't at the point of experiencing rati, or attraction for the holy name, then there's another tapasya. No, you have to chant the holy name. Of course, some people eliminate that tapasya by not chanting. Well, that's, if you don't, you know, you can eliminate that one. But then everything else becomes even more tapasya. So the whole day is one tapasya after another. But we don't notice that tapasya as long as we're enthusiastic to achieve something in life. Just like materialistic persons, they don't notice that every day they have to go to work for 8-10 hours. Of course, devotees also have to do that. And if one is not fixed in one's goal, their goal may be money, family, friendship, the society. So they won't notice that in order to achieve my weekend pleasures, or my vacation pleasure, or my family pleasure, that I have to go to work every day. No. I remember when we were doing Sangirtan in Florida, we used to do Sangirtan in the welcome station. You know? And you'd see everyone coming when they came down for vacation. When you did that side, it was great. You know, everybody's coming down, a lot of money for vacation, really happy. We're going to go to Florida and warm up and have a nice time. But then when we had to do the other side, that was horrible. You know? The leaving side, everybody's sunburned. The dog's barking, the kids are crying. No, person's thinking, next day I have to go back to work. no money, that was very difficult. You know, usually we do about, you know, well, myself, I do about 50 to 60 books on the welcome side and about 5 on the leaving side. So these are just the times when the vacation's over, when the weekend's over, then people become a little aware of their tapasya, but then they forget about it. But because the devotee's goal is so much more pleasurable and so much more attainable, the goal of a devotee to please Krishna, to become more Krishna conscious, to serve the Vaishnavas. No. This is something we do constantly, to chant the holy name, to hear about Krishna. We don't have to wait for the weekend. Of course, some people do. No. Some people wait for next Janmashtami, no, or next Gaur Purnima. But we don't have to do that. No. We can do it every day. We can do it at every moment. Kirtaniya sada hari. We can hear about Krishna at every moment. No. It's just a question of how enthusiastic are we? And therefore, Rupa Goswami says, utsahan nishtaya dayaryat. If you have these three things in your life, and tat tat karma pravartanat, if you have enthusiasm, and if you have patience, no, patience is important. We discussed that the other day, that a devotee must have patience when understanding that everything that Krishna is giving me is for my benefit. And when things are not so pleasurable, then we remember atmakritam, that everything I'm receiving is within the jurisdiction of atmakritam, things that I did in the past. Therefore, if what I did in the past is not so auspicious, then his mercy will come in such a way that I will forget about those inauspicious activities. No, I will find them not profitable to continue doing. No. And if my previous activities were materially auspicious, then I have to be careful. No. Srila Prabhupada says in his purport to one of my favorite purports in Bhagavad Gita to 256, where it says, what's the verse? 256. Can't remember the verse right now. Anyway. Dukam vanudvigna, no. Mana sukeshu vigata spriyaha, vitaraga baya krodha, stitadir munir uchate. That Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that one, the verse says that we should be equally equiposed in happiness and distress. So Srila Prabhupada says, whenever there's distress, one should think, I should have suffered so much more. And Krishna is just giving me this much. How much suffering does Krishna give his devotee? Just enough to remember that I shouldn't do that again. No, just that much. It's like a loving parent when they may chastise their child. No. If they're a loving parent, they don't chastise their child out of anger. No. They do it out of concern. Now, if one is not a loving parent, if one not a loving parent means someone whose personal sense gratification is more important than my service to the child. And whether one be a devotee or a non-devotee, the real factor in being a loving parent is that I'm more concerned about the child than I am about myself. Nowadays, because sense gratification has become the goal of life, we see that we hear about these cases all the time, you know, that people who abuse their children, beat their children, you know, mothers who can't just practically, they can't tolerate their children crying. Why? Because they've been brought up in an atmosphere of sense gratification. And therefore, the child's existence and the child's crying becomes a disturbance to their sense gratification. And therefore, they're not very loving parents. But a loving parent will always be concerned that if I have to chastise, I will just do enough that the child will be corrected. No. In the case of Krishna, Mother Yashoda loved Krishna so much that every time she wanted to chastise him, of course, in the most famous chastisement in all of his Leela, Damodar Lila. No. Mother Yashoda is very determined to chastise Krishna. No. She's very determined. I'm going to chastise Krishna this time. No. He's so naughty. First of all, she wouldn't chastise him when he was going and stealing butter out of other people's houses, because she was thinking that actually it must be that my milk is of inferior quality. My yogurt, my milk is not sweet enough, is not nice enough. Therefore, she told Nanda Maharaj that you have to take the cows to this particular place. These particular cows, which produce the nicest milk, and they have to eat this grass. And this way, I will be able to make milk, which is so tasty that Krishna won't go to anyone else's house. That was her. She was thinking it's my fault. But then after she made all those arrangements, and Krishna kept doing it, then when he broke the pot right in front of her, basically speaking out of anger, then she said, this time I'm going to chastise Krishna. But then Krishna, by his fearful eyes and then his smile and then the fact that she couldn't bind him up until he allowed her to, no, she couldn't chastise him. No. Jagannath Mishra many times was determined to chastise Lord Chaitanya. One time when Lord Chaitanya was young, he would repeatedly go to the Ganga and he would play with his friends. But when he was playing, in the midst of playing with his friends, he wanted to reveal that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He did this many times. He revealed that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But nobody could understand. So he would go to the Brahmins when they were chanting Gayatri. He would go under the water and pull their feet out. So they would just fall into the water. And especially one Brahmin, he complained to Jagannath Mishra that your son, whenever I'm meditating, whenever I'm meditating on the Supreme Lord, he comes and says, and disturbs my meditation and says, what are you doing? That object upon which you're meditating is standing right in front of you. Why do you have your eyes closed? No. And then another Brahmin, he said he came up and sat on the throne of Vishnu. And then he started eating the offering. No. And he looked at me like, what's wrong? No. You called me, what am I? So, and then sometimes he would just splash water with his feet and give everybody charanamrita. No. They didn't understand. They thought he was disturbing their bath, but he was, making them impure. But actually he was purifying them. So no one could understand, here's the Supreme Personality. So when Jagannath Mishra heard about that, he got a stick. He said, I'm going to chastise him. But of course, he came to the Ganga, he had this big stick. And so some of Lord Chaitanya's friends, they saw him and they warned him, he's coming. So he took another path on the way back. And then he just covered his body with dust, took some ink and put it on his fingers, came walking up with his books to his mother, Shachi. It was a hard day at school, And he arrived. And Jagannath Mishra came back and he said, he couldn't understand, But he said, he was determined, I'm going to chastise him anyway, And then he was just about to chastise him, And the Brahmin said, well, actually, you don't have to. The ones who were complaining, you don't have to chastise him. They just saw his smile and his lotus eyes. And actually, we're not even sure that those things really happened. No, you have to chastise him. And when the Brahmin came to, even before that, when the Brahmin came to visit his house, after he had eaten the offering once, Jagannath Mishra was going to chastise him. Then he ate the offering of the Brahmin two times. And then he took a stick and he was so angry that everybody calmed him down, even the Brahmin, and he couldn't even look at anybody. He was so angry. And then he put Nimai in his room. He said, I'm going to tie up the door. But then everybody said, no, he's already asleep. And he said, okay, I'll stay right here by the door. It was so, but he couldn't do it. Because Nimai would just smile. So Krishna, also with his devotee, he doesn't want to chastise the devotee. And actually, if we look at it in the proper way, it's not really chastisement. No. It's just his mercy. And that mercy is coming in such a way that will bring us to his lotus feet. That's the only thing it is. It's Krishna is calling us to his lotus feet. He's not chastising us. So if a devotee can see like that and see, and what, and anyway, whatever I was supposed to receive, I'm just getting one fraction, one small, tiny fraction of what I deserve. And then this is the hard part. That's the easy, well, it's the easy part in one sense. Not so easy, but even harder than that is that when we get some prosperity, some external, some material prosperity, to think, I don't deserve this. No, I don't deserve this. But by some by Krishna's grace, his causeless mercy, he's giving me these facilities to perform a better service for him. Usually we do just the opposite. No. When we get some chastisement, we think, I don't deserve this. No. And then when we get some material benefit, we think, this is just a little fraction of what I should get. No. And we do the exact opposite. No. So Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. But in the material world, as the Bhagavatam says, because of the anxiety and the stress of this material world, bhayam dvitiya vinivesita syat ishara petasya viparyayo ashmiti, because of bhaya, this high degree of anxiety of trying to enjoy the material world, we see the secondary cause as the primary factor, which is maya. So therefore, ishara petasya viparyaya. Therefore, it's just the opposite. Everything's just the opposite. Instead of wanting to please Krishna and serve Krishna, we want to enjoy Krishna, enjoy Krishna's property, enjoy Krishna's blessings when they come in a very pleasurable form, and not see his blessings when they come in a not so pleasurable way. So, therefore, tapasya. Tapasya gives us clear vision. So this tapasya that's referred to in the previous verse and in this verse that we're speaking about today, in the month of Kartik, observing a vow for 1 year. Now one may think, wait a minute, Ambarish Maharaj is the topmost devotee. He's only observing Ekadashi for 1 year? No. We may think like that. But no. He observed it for 1 year. That means that he observed it for 1 year, as it says here, in Madhuvan, in Mathura. No. In Mathura, he did it for 1 year. Meaning that when we do our Ekadashi in Krishna consciousness, in full Krishna consciousness, then it becomes more meaningful. Like many people follow Ekadashi in India. But when a devotee follows it, what is it for? It says here, Harim Madhubane Chayat. It's to please Lord Hari. No. And Srila Prabhupada says that here. Ambarish Maharaj worshiped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in Madhuban. So this is the real purpose of Ekadashi. The real purpose is to please Hari. And so therefore, to emphasize that pleasure, he did this Ekadashi vow for 1 year in Madhuban, in Vrindavan. And the three nights means that actually the first night he did full fasting, and the other 2 days on Dwadashi and Trayadashi, there's a prescribed amount that you're supposed to eat on Dwadashi and Trayadashi. So he only ate that amount, and that's considered that the fast is a full 3 days. So this is like according to the technicalities of following Ekadashi. Srila Prabhupada said, in the same class that I'm referring to, he said that tapasya, the type of tapasya that we're doing, is, these great sages used to sit in the sun in the midst of scorching heat or in a cold river, as I mentioned the other day. This type of tapasya is not possible for us. So what is our tapasya? Srila Prabhupada said, follow these four regulative principles. And then Prabhupada said, and even that we cannot do. Now, Prabhupada said that because by 1975 he realized that so many devotees were not so expert, even following this very basic tapasya. And then Srila Prabhupada said, and more important, chanting the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Of course, this is only tapasya, chanting, when we don't have a taste. You know? So, of course, we discussed that last night. Two Maharajas elaborated very nicely how we develop that taste, just what we're doing right now. You know? If we do this every day, therefore Srila Prabhupada gave the ISKCON sandwich. You know? All we have to do to develop a taste is to have a sandwich every day. Everybody likes sandwiches, no? But sometimes we don't like the ISKCON sandwich, you know? That we have Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita on the outside, you know? And the beginning and the end, Bhagavatam, hear the Bhagavatam, hear Bhagavad Gita. Even if it's only for a few minutes, even if for some or another you don't have internet, you can't hear the class because you're right at that time, you have to be doing something else. And even in the evening, if you can't hear, then you just read the Bhagavatam for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Just hear the Bhagavatam. Try to meditate on that message. Just like today, there's a certain message about observing the vow of Ekadashi, very strictly meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in a few days, three more days, Ekadashi will be coming up. So we can remember. This is the way to apply the Bhagavatam. So Ekadashi is coming out. Let me remember Krishna. This is the purpose. Let me remember Krishna on this Ekadashi. No. Don't let me just think, when is the Ekadashi feast coming out? No. What will we have today? Cheese and potatoes and no. What will be the nice feast today? Ekadashi pizza with banana flour crust. No. That may also be there. But just try to meditate. Srila Prabhupada mentions that Ekadashi means you fast all day and chant the holy name. And Prabhupada said, but we don't do that. We're not so strict. No. We simply avoid grains, food grains. And we take a little, Prabhupada said, many times I've seen him say this, we take a little milk and fruit. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially when he got a little older, his method of following Ekadashi was he would fast all day long until about 4 o'clock. Then he would take fruit and milk. And that was all that he would take in the day. That was his Ekadashi because his body couldn't do like previously. I mean, he was so austere when he was younger. Speak about tapasya. No. He took his vow to chant the holy name in the same way as Srila Haridas Thakur. So he said, before I do anything else, because he wanted to be prepared, he felt like to perform devotional service for Krishna, one must be prepared. So he took a vow of chanting 1 billion names. No. 1 billion names, minimal chanting per day, the same as Haridas Thakur. No, that means 300,000 names per day. Now you figure that's 192 rounds per day. No. Now if you chant 192 rounds per day, it comes out to chant 1 billion names. It comes out to about 10 years. No. So he did this vow for 10 years. No. He did a little less because he chanted a little more. And he was so determined that he built a little hut, but after some time, just in the mood of Kolavecha Sridhar, Kolavecha Sridhar was so attached to chanting the holy name and doing devotional service that he had a little hut, little bhajan kutir. And the roof, part of the roof was deteriorated. So he would just go under the other part and say, why should I repair it when the other part's still good? Because repairing it means I have to take time away from my devotional service. So also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when the part of his roof wore out, he just got an umbrella. And he would just keep chanting and hold up the umbrella when it rained. And so much austerity. He would just eat rice. And during Kartik, he would eat rice by the, I forget the technical name, but you eat like a cow, which means you put the prasadam on the ground, just a little khichdi or rice, and then you just, without using your hands, you just take what you can. And even the strictest way to do it is you put it on the ground and you take as much as you can in one breath. Otherwise you go, then you go down, and however much you can get before you have to take another breath, that's it for the day. No. So, of course, you might want to practice some pranayama before you do that, no. Especially if you're hungry. No. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada said, we're not expected to do these kinds of austerities because they're very, very severe and very difficult. No. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took so many vows. No. He took so many vows. Even Krishna, someone mentioned yesterday, or maybe it was the other day in the class, that Krishna took a vow that even though I have nothing to do in the Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, even though I have nothing to do within these three worlds, he took a vow that I will work. No. Because Krishna, in the Upanishads, Krishna is defined as natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. He's the one person who has nothing to do. And natachamas cha vikas cha jishate. He has no competition. No. Generally, we work very hard because of competition. No, we have to work harder because otherwise somebody else will sell more than me and there won't be enough money. But Krishna has no competition. He has no impetus for work. But what is his impetus? He takes a vow that if I do not work, then the whole three worlds will be put into ruination. Therefore, Krishna. So Krishna takes vows. No. He took a vow when he was young, even a young boy in his ashram, when he was in the ashram of Sandipani Muni. He went out with his friend Sudam Vipra. No. And he went out, and Sudam Vipra, they got caught in this huge storm. And it was raining so hard that the water had risen up to a point where you couldn't even see the ground. No. I mean, that's a lot of rain. Generally speaking, sometimes it rains hard here, but not to the point where you can't even see the ground. No. But they were still very determined to collect the firewood that they had gone to collect and bring it to their spiritual master. No. So, if the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes vows, what to speak of Lord Chaitanya? His vows were so strict that the devotees would become disturbed. No. Just like Lord Chaitanya, whenever he was so determined to be a strict sannyasi, that sometimes he would put the devotees in distress. No. Just like he would sleep on the ground with no pillow, no straw, nothing. No. And on one particular occasion, when the godbrother of his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri's spiritual master, his godbrother was Ramachandra Puri. So many of us know the story of Ramachandra Puri. He was very nasty. Ramachandra Puri was very nasty because he had offended his spiritual master. The first thing he did was he offended the Vaishnavas. And when you offend the Vaishnavas, then the next thing is you will offend the spiritual master. And if you offend the spiritual master, then you will offend the Supreme Lord. So what did he do? Ramachandra Puri would invite different Vaishnavas. In a specific occasion, he invited Jagadananda to take prasadam. No, well, actually invited himself to take prasadam with Jagadananda. So then Jagadananda fed him, and he ate very nicely, and he said, now you eat. No. And so Jagadananda took his prasadam and said, well, eat, you should eat more. You know, you eat as much as you want. So he took more. You know, he's thinking, I'll please this sannyasi, I'll take more. So he took more. And he said, just see, I heard that the followers of this Chaitanya overeat, and now I have proof. You know? So he tricked him into eating more. Jagadananda felt very bad. So he offended Jagadananda. And then after that, he offended his own spiritual master, Sri Madhavendra Puri. Because when Madhavendra Puri was leaving this planet, he was crying. No? Painu na Mathura. Oh, I have not attained Mathura, in total ecstasy of separation from Krishna. And Madhavendra Puri came and he said, Yamachandra Puri came and he said, why are you crying? No, you should be meditating on Brahman. No, that Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na Shochati na Kangshati, why are you lamenting? No, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you're not supposed to lament. You're supposed to be a devotee of Krishna. Why are you lamenting? Why are you crying? Just be absorbed in Brahman. And Madhavendra said, oh, I am separated from Mathura, and this fool comes and says such disturbing things. He said, please get out of here, because if I see your face at the time of death, who knows what my destiny will be? No. So you can imagine, if this is your last thing you hear from your spiritual master, get out of here. No. Get out of here. I don't want to see your face. So he lost the grace of his spiritual master, and he became an impersonalist. No. Became a Mayavadi. And so, then, up to his old tricks, when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to visit him. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very correct in his Vaishnava etiquette. So this was his god uncle, no, this god brother of his spiritual master. So he received him very nicely, and he came in and he spoke very nicely and smiled. But then after he left the cottage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he started telling everyone, this sannyasi is eating sweets, because there were some ants in the room. So his deduction was, if there's ants in the room, he must be eating sweets, and therefore there's ants. And therefore he started criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to everybody. So what did Mahaprabhu do? He didn't do what we would do. We would defend ourselves. We'd write an article on the internet and say all the reasons why I'm such a nice devotee. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, he told his servants, immediately I will only eat rice and I will only eat 1/4 of what I usually eat. No. And so his servants became so disturbed. They also started eating only 1/2 of what they would eat. They couldn't even eat 1/4. That was like too much. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were crying. And finally he only broke that vow because he saw that his devotees were practically leaving their bodies. They were so distressed to see the austerities of Mahaprabhu that they were practically leaving their bodies. So this was the strength of his vows. He took the vow of sannyas. He took the vow, so many different vows. No, he was very strict on the Ekadashi vow, so much so that even when he was a young boy, Mother Sachi, it was part of the Vedic tradition, the old Vedic tradition, not so much the Vaishnava tradition, but also sometimes Vaishnavas did this, that if a woman was married, then she would follow Ekadashi through her husband, meaning that she herself may not follow it, but she would, because her husband was following, that was like, just like when you fly into the country, they only give you one customs form for the whole family. So it was like, one person doing Ekadashi was good for the whole family. And so she wasn't always following Ekadashi. So even though Nimai was just a young boy, he said, my dear mother, can I please ask you one thing, if I can only ask you one thing in this life? And, yes, my dear son, please follow Ekadashi. No. And immediately she said, oh yes, of course, I will do that. Because generally speaking, only a widow would... she was so chaste to her husband that she would not compete with her husband in austerity. So when the husband was following Ekadashi, she would not follow Ekadashi. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked her to do that, even though at that time she was still, Jagannath Mishra was still present on the planet, she began to follow Ekadashi. So all these vows are so important. They're demonstrated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by all of his servants, no? And we see one of the greatest vows which has affected us directly is the vow of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, my credit is that I took very seriously what my spiritual master told me. And what did he say? That you spread this Krishna consciousness in the English language. And Srila Prabhupada, there were so many indications. Usually, many times in our cases, whenever there's the slightest indication that something may not be possible, we give it up. If there's the slightest indication that this may be too difficult, we give it up. We may justify it. Ah, prayashaha. Rupa Goswami says not to over-endeavor. But Srila Prabhupada knew that if the spiritual master says something, then to follow that is not over-endeavor. It is my life and soul. And because he had said, you spread this Krishna consciousness in the English language, meaning, Prabhupada understood immediately, meaning take it to the West. So Prabhupada immediately began to preach in English. Even sometimes Prabhupada in Pandav program, I remember one Pandav program in 76 in Delhi. It was like maybe about, 8,000-10,000 people in the Pandav. And they were all, simple people from Delhi. I'm sure that maybe 5% of them spoke English, and Prabhupada spoke in English. Because he wanted to show the devotees that this is what my spiritual master told me. This is what I will do. Of course, sometimes he did speak in Hindi or Bengali, but this particular time, because all of his disciples were there, he wanted them to hear. He wanted them to understand. And he wanted to understand what was the mission that they had. So by his vow, by his very strict following, he has taught us the importance of these most important vows of chanting the Maha Mantra, 16 rounds minimum per day, and following the four regulative principles. And Srila Prabhupada considered that vow so important that he said on many occasions that if you just chant 16 rounds daily without fail and follow the four regulative principles, you will go back home, back to God. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada left Venezuela on the last day, he said that if you chant, you dedicate your lives to devotional service, chant 16 rounds, and follow these four regulative principles, you will see Krishna face to face in this lifetime. Prabhupada said, that I guarantee. So this is the special mercy of the pure devotee. One may say, there's so many injunctions in the Shastra that you have to do this and you have to do that. But the word of the pure devotee is the highest injunction. So this is Srila Prabhupada's request, and this is Srila Prabhupada's guarantee. If we strictly follow, even in our minds, these four regulative principles, and we chant the Maha Mantra 16 rounds minimum per day, then Srila Prabhupada's guarantee is we will go back home, back to Godhead. And even he said, in this life you will see Krishna face to face. Of course, we are seeing Krishna face to face now, right here. But sometimes we don't realize it. So that realization will come by the mercy of the pure devotee. So I'll stop here. Are there any comments? Prajapati Prabhu? Or any questions? Any instructions? If I get some instructions from the Vaishnavas, I'll feel very, my day is complete. Okay, thank you very much. Here's one question coming. Or instruction, maybe.
Thank you, Maharaj. It's a question. The austerity of, I was hoping if you can speak a little more, the austerity of you mentioned the Vaishnava Parad in the course of your class, and we hear about making offenses about you know, how detrimental they are when we make an offenses to other Vaishnavas. But I was hoping you can speak more about austerity of not taking the offense.
The austerity of not taking it as an offense?
Yeah, because we hear, you know, about danger, but there's also danger of just when we take the offense, then also it can be detrimental for...
Well, yes, there's two sides to offenses. One is that the danger of offending someone. You know? And, of course, a pure Vaishnava doesn't feel like they've been offended. Just like when Devananda Pandit offended Srivas. By throwing him out of, well, he didn't throw him out, but the other students threw him out of the assembly, thinking that what is this person doing, rolling around on the ground, you know, crying. A disturbance. They thought it was a disturbance. So they actually put him outside. And when Srivas came back to external consciousness, because he was so absorbed in the Bhagavatam, he was actually in internal consciousness, then he felt very sad. Because he thought, I don't deserve to hear the Bhagavatam. He didn't think, well, these rascals, wait till the next thunderstorm, Krishna will chastise them, strike them with lightning. No. He thought, I'm not worthy of hearing the Bhagavatam. So he didn't take an offense. No. Just like Ambarish Maharaj, was written this story, and just coming up, just now coming, no, is the offense. His offense against Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish Maharaj didn't take it as an offense. He thought, no, I'm an offender. I shouldn't have broken the Dwadashi. I should have waited for him. No. And actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in many places, many different lectures, that Durvasa Muni, from the very beginning, actually, even before he came, he actually had the intention of finding some fault with Ambarish Maharaj. Because he was thinking, this man is an ordinary king and everyone is glorifying him. And I'm a big sadhu. And people are not glorifying me. No. So there's something wrong here. You know, I'm a big Durvasa Muni and he's just a king. And everybody's glorifying him and nobody's glorifying me. No. So he was, no. So a Vaishnava really doesn't take offense very easily. Sometimes, if one is in a position of taking a superior position, we have to point out an offense. No, just like especially the guru has to be careful not to. Just like Srila Prabhupada, the famous pastime where Srila Prabhupada, you know, two of his disciples, they said they wanted to get divorced. And Prabhupada said it wasn't good. But then ultimately Prabhupada accepted. So his servant asked him, Prabhupada, you said that there's no divorce in Krishna consciousness. So why did you accept? Prabhupada said, because if they were going to do it anyway. So in order that they didn't commit an offense by not obeying my instruction, I said, I authorize. Yeah. So Prabhupada knew the danger of committing an offense. So this is also a duty of a superior. If they see that someone's going to commit some offense, they should be able to adjust things so that there are no offenses. No. Of course, we can't adjust things to the point where, you know, that the people, there's no requirement. Adjustments can only go so far. But because this is an external thing, it's a very important thing that marriages, as Giriraj Maharaj pointed out the other day, that when we have the proper understanding, because there is no divorce, then there's an obligation to work things out. But because the whole society nowadays is so topsy-turvy that people have a hard time following that. And nowadays, we have to adjust these things so that people, because the most important thing is not that people don't get divorced. The most important thing is that people become Krishna conscious and chant the holy name. No. So sometimes we have to accept something that's not the best. It's not the Vedic way. It's not the traditional Vaishnava way of doing things. then we accept it if it will increase, if it will enhance the devotional service of those persons. So these types of adjustments, of course, they can be delicate and they can be tricky, because otherwise you can adjust out 16 rounds, you can adjust out the four regulated principles. If you keep adjusting, you'll adjust everything to the point where there's nothing left. So, the only thing left is taking prasadam or something. I adjusted everything else out. The only thing else is I go see the deities every once in a while and take prasadam. So we have to be careful about adjusting, but there are basic essential principles, chanting the holy name, chanting 16 rounds. But even sometimes Srila Prabhupada adjusted chanting 16 rounds. Just like there was one one devotee, the cook, elderly cook, what was his name? Bibhu Chaitanya in Vrindavan. And he was so engaged in devotional service that he didn't always chant his rounds. And so one time he was chanting in the kitchen in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was doing the parikram. And Prabhupada heard his singing. He was singing the holy name. Prabhupada said, "Who is singing?" And they said, "Oh, it's Vibhu Chaitanya." He said, "Oh, very, very nice." He said, "But yes, but he's singing, Prabhupada, but he doesn't always chant his rounds." Prabhupada said, "Those are his rounds." So sometimes Prabhupada would make some adjustment so that someone would continue the devotional service. But those exceptions should not be made the rule. But the point is that as far as not taking offense, naturally a Vaishnava will not take offense. Naturally. Naturally we should not accept. Unless by making someone understand that what they're doing is offensive, in the mood of helping them, of being merciful to them, that may be there if we're in a superior position. Otherwise, we should not be very anxious to take offenses. Just like sometimes I hear devotees saying, "This person offended me, I'm very upset because they offended me." Of course, that may be a natural psychological reaction. We may not be on the platform of Shivas Thakur or Ambarish Maharaj. So naturally we may feel offended. So therefore a devotee, especially when we're dealing with neophyte devotees, we have to be more careful. I mean, in one sense, because they will take offense very easily. Of course, maybe that's good, because then you realize it right away. Then you realize, hey, wait a minute, this person feels offended. Whereas with somebody like Shivas, you may never understand that I offended them, because they're so humble and so Krishna conscious that you may never understand it. Because
that's even more dangerous.
Yes.
And you don't even know.
Yes. Sometimes those things happen. Just like Rupa Goswami, Vrindavan, he was meditating on Radha and Krishna, and he didn't offend anyone, but someone thought that he was offending them. And just by thinking that way, he lost his meditation. And then Rupa Goswami finally discovered what had happened. And also the other Vaishnava realized that Rupa Goswami had not in any way discredited him. And they both offered obeisances to one another, chanted the holy name. So offenses can be very dangerous. Of course, in the case of somebody like Rupa Goswami, he never commits an offense. But sometimes Krishna performs a pastime that appears to be an offense, or appears to be, just like one time Rupa Goswami was meditating and writing, and he was hungry. So all of a sudden a young girl came up and brought him a nice big basket of prasadam. She said, I just live here in the nearby village. So when Rupa Goswami inquired about that, he wanted to thank her. And he inquired, no one knew that girl. And then when he explained it to Sanatan Goswami, what had happened, Sanatan Goswami said, "You have accepted service from Srimati Radharani." That unknowingly, that actually Radha came because he was fasting. brought him ingredients, and he didn't realize it at the time. Or when Madhavendra Puri was sitting and meditating in Govardhan, and Krishna came and gave him milk. You know. Then he realized later that was Krishna. I accepted service from Krishna. You know. He felt very bad. But then, of course, Krishna revealed himself and gave him service. So a devotee is so humble that when we're actually in a perfectional stage of devotional service, that and when you're in a superior position, then you have to not take offense, but you have to indicate that someone is doing something wrong. No. That is important. But we shouldn't be anxious to do that. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, just to finish up, so he said that actually being a guru is the biggest austerity. Because you can't think you're a guru. No. He said, on the one hand, you can't think you're a guru, otherwise you're guru, you're like a cow, ass mentality. No. But he said, on the other hand, you have to chastise the disciple. But in chastising the disciple, then you may offend a Vaishnava. And he said, it's not a very pleasurable service in that sense. But we only do it for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of God. So it's like a difficult thing. Because if you even think that these are my disciples, then if one isn't thinking that way, you know, one may say these are my disciples, but if one is thinking that, then you're in the wrong mentality. So being a Vaishnava is a very great responsibility. Such delicate deliberations and considerations. At every moment, we have to be weighing everything and figuring out, is this the right way? No, it's a very great responsibility.
It's like catching a fish and not getting wet.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that would even be easier. So I think we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glory to Shri Guru, Shri Gauranga, Shri Prabhupada ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki, Tai Gaur Premanandi. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.